This podcast was created by the Junior Cycle English team for the Junior Cycle Talks channel. This is the first of a two-part episode of Conversations from the Classroom, where we talk to English teacher Joe Ralston from the Presentation Secondary School in Wexford. Joe talks about strategies he adopts when approaching new texts and the experience he has had with his students in the classroom when working with literary and non-literary texts in tandem. We hope that you enjoy. I'm delighted to be here this afternoon with teacher Joe Ralston and to have a nice conversation with them. So I might just start things off very generally. Joe, would you be able to tell me a little bit about your school, your students, your context?
Certainly, Elizabeth. Yeah, I teach in the Presentation Secondary School in Wexford Town. It's quite a large school in a highly urbanised area of Wexford Town. We're just under 900 students, about 60 teachers. Interestingly enough, though, our students predominantly come from the countryside. We have over 30 feeder schools in our catchment area, going right up to the north of the county and right down to the south of the county and everywhere in between. So we have quite a diverse student population. We have that lovely blend between students coming from more rural areas, blended with the students who are coming from the town primary schools as well. Our school is a Keshe school. It's a voluntary Catholic secondary school. And we, back in 2018, we celebrated our 200th anniversary. So we've been in Wexford Town since October 1818. So we were the first kind of religious organisation to come to Wexford. So we're very proud of our educational place as being the first home for education in Wexford Town and the wider catchment area in and of itself. So it's a very busy place to work. We've a huge element of volunteerism amongst the teaching staff and the school as well, not just sporting, but other areas of extracurricular. Very interesting developments in terms of deep green writing, creative writing program in the school. We have a very active student librarian team. We have our own dedicated library in the main building as well, which obviously supports a lot of the stuff that we're trying to do in the classroom as well on a daily basis, whether it's first years or right up to sixth year. So it's never a dull moment working in the school, that's for sure. I'm going into my 14th year now working in the school, so I'm there for a reason. I'm a native of Sligo myself. I came to Wexford literally just a few weeks after handing in my master's thesis in English UCC, and it's a really enjoyable place to work and to learn as well, because I learn so much from the students on a daily basis as well. I would teach every year group from first year right up to sixth year, so as I said, it's never a dull moment, that's for sure.
Lovely. It sounds like a really inspirational place to be a part of the education of young people there. You mentioned your library. With Junior Cycle English, we endeavour to expose students to a wide variety of texts. What has been one of the most popular text choices for your students?
I'd have to contextualise that a little bit. Like, we are very lucky to have that library space, and I do have to give a huge hat to our librarian, Grainne Power, if she's listening. She's done a huge amount of work over the last few years in broadening students' experiences with texts. So we have different kind of subsections within the library itself and different subgenres. We have a bigger emphasis now on manga comics and graphic novels and so on. Try and expose students to more multimodal texts as well, rather than your standard kind of canonical literature that kind of has dominated second level education for many years. But to contextualize in terms of choice of texts, everything comes back to first year for me. In many ways for me, first year is the most important year out of the 3 years for the junior cycle, because when I get a new group, I spend a huge amount of time, pretty much the first half of first year, and I'm currently right in the middle of that at the moment, getting to know the 30 odd students that are in front of me and getting to know what their likes and dislikes are, because they're all coming in from different areas. As I mentioned, we're students coming in from over 30 different feeder schools. That's a lot of different contexts coming in one classroom. So I spend a huge amount of time profiling my students, getting to see what their interests are in relation to reading in general and in their interaction with texts as a whole. And we'll speak later about the broader focus on our understanding of what a text is. But certainly the rationale behind me choosing a particular novel scribe list in second and third year will be very much based on what we had been doing in first year and what we have been exposing the class to and their interactions with it, what their likes and dislikes, what worked and what didn't work. Because I don't go with the rationale that, okay, this is the novel that we're going to do always in second year, or this is the novel we're always going to do in third year. I kind of change things depending on the needs or the specific needs of the group that's in front of me. So over the years, I would have, obviously, you go back to texts, yes, like Of Mice and Men, or To Kill a Mockingbird. The Outside is a perennial classic. Students are still relating so much to those characters in Hinton's novel. But I've broadened it out, Animal Farm and Lord of the Flies, getting them to kind of link in a little bit more with their history studies a little bit. A couple of years ago, I did The Savage as one of the texts as well. But again, I wouldn't have done these novels had I not grounded the students in the experience of exposing them to that initially in first year. Like, I just bring a novel or a graphic novel like The Savage on a second year or third year group without having grounded them in some kind of experience of exposing to that, whether it be in the library that we have in the school or whether that be in the classroom. So I think choice of text is very much reflective of the individual group I have in front of me. And that's the great thing about being an English teacher, because every different group will have their own kind of interests and likes and dislikes, and that mix of ability as well, which has to be catered for as well. So there's never a kind of a one size or one text fits all approach in terms of choice. I would very much have the students part of that choice as well in terms of what options we have and what interests they have themselves. And that's where we go in terms of dovetailing our choices then when it comes to actually getting into the nitty gritty of the coursework as we get into second year and obviously progressing into third year then as well.
Okay, so you really valued that idea of student voice and the importance of co-creating essentially the curriculum for yourself and your students as you kind of build together to meet their personalities, their interests and their needs as students in your classroom. So I can relate to that in my own classroom as well, and trying to find things that are going to ignite students' interests and passion. You mentioned there bringing in new texts such as The Savage, or approaching things that are maybe a little bit different. Maybe you could talk to me a little bit about these sort of supports or resources that help you when teaching a new text, such as a novel, a drama, a film, from the prescribed text list.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think we've had a kind of a culture shift, I think, with the transition over from the old junior cycle course to the new junior cycle specification, because I think the old course, and it had its merits, I was a student of the old junior cycle course as well, but I think it was very much, oh, is there a study resource available for that text? Or is there a set of notes for that particular text? My philosophy will be very different on that. I don't choose a text with a group of students with the knowledge of, okay, well, there's absolutely nothing available online or available on a book in a bookshop to help me with that. It's very much my rationale is quite simple. If we're talking about choosing novels or choosing a film text or choosing a play, I always try to make sure there's kind of a visual or auditory element in terms of supports. So obviously, if it's a novel, is there an audiobook available for that? If we're doing a theater production, okay, what production can I use with the students? Can I actually bring them to a live production of the performance, which is what theater is all about at the end of the day? In terms of film, our choices of film, is it because a lot of our students coming into us now are visual learners, and they're the Netflix generation, and they're the ones that are the streaming generation. They've been exposed to this. The list of texts, okay, have I grounded them in a wide variety of visual film texts in first year? So I would do a lot of work on different short films, developing the language of film with them as well, that they've grounded all of that. And again, that goes back to what I was saying about the importance of first year being the foundation on that. And in terms of poetry as well, trying to move away from your canonical writers. And again, I'm not trying to dismiss the canon, because the canon obviously is important. It's there for a reason, but I try not to let my choice of poems in particular kind of be dominated by that. So even in the last few years, I've been trying to bring in other kind of more contemporary voices. Like last year, I remember my second year group, I would have done a number of poems by Feely Speaks. And obviously there was one poem in particular still, which was written at the height of the pandemic, really, that really caught a nerve. And I was a little bit nervous approaching that, because obviously, okay, we're right in the thick of this, and this is in the middle of online teaching learning. Do they really want to study a poem about the pandemic? But it probably was one of the highlights from the second lockdown in terms of the engagement that I got from the students at the time and the power of the words. And to have different voices coming in, not just your typical go to the war poets or go to your Walter Delamere's or go to your Robert Frost. I tried to tailor, again, going back to the concept of student choice again, I tried to tailor the needs around the particular group in and of itself. But having physical resources or supports are not important. One thing I will say has helped me hugely is the EduTwitter community on Twitter. If anyone's listening to me here and they're not on Twitter, that would be one of the best things I would say to recommend in terms of ongoing CPT is that wonderful community that there, that if you are stuck for something and you really do need something, there's more than willing community out there to help you with that. One thing I will say that has helped me hugely in terms of choice of texts is dialoguing on Twitter with other teachers in terms of what's been working and what hasn't been working in terms of resources and so on. But it certainly wouldn't be like at the forefront of my choices and say, okay, I don't have anything to give to the students on this. We will develop resources as we're going through the text. And again, at the end of the day, the most important resource is the actual text itself, because that's the template and that's the foundation on which you can build lots of different responses along the way.
Okay, so really seeing a value in the students as a resource as well, and the knowledge of yourself professionally and other teachers in your community to draw on their experience of a text in a classroom space and approaches that they found worked, methodologies they found worked more so than a sheet. With that in mind then, would you be able to talk to me a bit about how you approached the drama, The Woman in Black? How did that work for you? I know you've used that before in your classroom space.
Yeah, obviously, as part of the prescribed list in second and third, teachers will know if you're taking students to higher level, they have to do a full Shakespearean text. That's fine. We do Romeo and Juliet in our school primarily. But I was curious about the other drama texts. And I think that curiosity led me to going into The Woman in Black, very much grounded in the fact that I'm a huge fan of the novel by Susan Hill. And it actually was a text that I did cover with an old junior cert English class that I had. So I was very interested to see, okay, how could a playwright approach this text now? A text that had been very, and still is, a very popular story. And I think around the time as well, there was the Daniel Radcliffe film version had come out as well. So at the time, it was in the news at the time. But I have to say that if there wasn't, I was lucky enough the year that we had said, okay, is this a text we would like to do? I was lucky that the Gaiety were putting on a production of it. So I had this in the back of my head. Okay, this is going to be the template on which we're going to study the text. And it wasn't just an extract. We ended up studying the whole play, because I ended up creating a whole module of that kind of genre of literature around it. So at the time we were approaching the text, and it is an unusual approach, because I obviously had the knowledge of the novel in the back of my head. And Stephen Malachat, who adapted it into a play, he approaches it in a very kind of overtly self-reflexive theatrical way, that it actually is a performance being performed on stage for us. So if I look at the blurb on the text, it says, a lawyer hires an actor to tutor him in recounting to family and friends a story that has long troubled him concerning events that transpired when he attended the funeral of an elderly recluse. And so begins the story of The Woman in Black. The lawyer has invited some friends to watch as he and the actor recreate the events of that dark and stormy night. So when we approached the text, the students found it very unusual that you have actually a literal actor on the stage performing the actual story. So there was a lovely self-reflexive moment when we were in the Gaiety up in Dublin and we were watching this. And it actually, I think it only really clicked for the students. We had covered the text before we went up, because I wanted the students to have a grounding in the text first. A lot of them were a little bit confused by the approach and the theatricality behind it. But once they had visually seen it, and it was a very intimate, as anyone's familiar with the Gaiety, how intimate that venue is. And we were like right up at the front of the stage. And it really made sense, that kind of intimate performance. It really added to the atmosphere and the theatricality of the performance, because it is a very atmospheric text. It probably was one of the major highlights for me as a teacher of English, coming out of that auditorium and seeing how absolutely enthralled they were. And I think it's very important at Junior Cycle to give them a practical understanding of how theatre works, because this is a gift we're giving them, not just but for further study as well. They're all going to go on to Leaving Cert or whatever and study their Shakespearean plays and so on. But to have that grounding in almost, like I would say, a non-Shakespearean text as well is important as well, that there are other plays out there outside of the world of Shakespeare. Not to diss William at all, he's one of the best, obviously, as we know. I also had experience as well of teaching Warhorse as well, adapted by Nick Stafford for the stage. And again, that choice was very much led knowing that the National Theatre were bringing it to the Borgosh Theatre. Again, another standout production, another standout performance. And again, I would have grounded the students in the text first. Again, a lot of that would have been led by their love of Michael Morpurgo in general. They had all read the novel from first year or in primary schools. They were very much one of the top authors that was coming up time and time again of stories that they had liked. So it was kind of a natural choice for us. Oh yeah, Warhorse, want to see what that's like. And the production, if anyone has seen it, it's just extraordinary, really. It really, really is one of the, you know, standout again moments, bringing a group to actually see a live production and the essence of the theatricality behind it. I keep using that term, the theatricality. I think it's very important to expose students to kind of bringing texts alive, literally in front of you, because they're the moments that they're going to remember, you know, in years to come. Oh, you remember we went to see that production? Oh, it was incredible, really, wasn't it? So then when we come back to the classroom after the productions, for those two contexts, for The Woman in Black and for Warhorse, I would have placed that text in the center of modules that I would have done specifically on that genre of ghostwriting. So we would have done short stories by Edgar Allan Poe. I had a nice little collection of short stories on American Gothic literature. So we would have done some poetry by Walter de la Mare, some very atmospheric kind of stuff. And it gave me kind of the platform to do a little bit of descriptive writing with them as well, in terms of how we build atmosphere and how we build tension. With Warhorse then, it was very much part and parcel of a little World War One module I was doing with the students. So different voices in different contexts. So again, you go to the canon, you have your Wilfred Owens and your Siegfried Sassoons. We did a little bit of a module on Vera Brittain's Testament of Youth as well at the time. I think the film version of that had just come out in the cinemas at the time. So I was showing the kind of clips from that as well. So I think, you know, having a text in that context, a highly theatrical text as kind of foundation in which you can explore different avenues, would be kind of one of the ways I would lead in terms of choice. But would I have covered those texts if I didn't have a live production to go to? I'm not quite sure if I would. I think that kind of led me, knowing that they were going to be able to see this live, because we would also have a history in our school of bringing our students to see productions of their Shakespearean texts at Junior Cycle and at Leaving Cert as well when they study for single texts. But I wanted them to have a non-Shakespearean experience of the theatre as well.
Okay, really kind of ensuring that students have that cultural capital behind them to understand the complexities and the nuances of drama on the stage is something that drives your selection and how you teach drama then, is what you're kind of saying there. Following on from that then, you mentioned there how you take the drama and you center it in amongst other texts in terms of creating modules around it. I think you mentioned some non-literary texts there. Would you maybe be able to talk to me a little bit about or give an example of where you took a non-literary text as a spin-off from one of your literary texts?
Yeah, I think you mentioned there, you know, I have a kind of a root focus in terms of how I approach my planning. So there would always be kind of a root focus per kind of a shift in the planning. So we mentioned the drama productions there, or if it was a novel or if it was a group of poems or whatever. That's kind of the root. And then the branches will branch out from that in terms of, okay, what experiences, what kind of writing or auditory experiences or visual experiences are the students going to get from that? And that's always in the back of my head when I'm planning and I'm approaching things, because these are very much life plans, but they change and they alter if things work and don't work on reflection and all of that. If I took, for example, I'll use a different example maybe from the theater. So if I took, for example, the World War One module that I kind of do kind of come back to and revisit and tweak from time to time. This year, just for example, with my third year group, I would have done a little module on, again, voices within the war experience. And I wanted to kind of focus more so on the female experience. So I would have rooted it again in Vera Brittain's Testament of Youth, which I'm a huge fan of. Now, it's a very long memoir, but I would have taken extracts from the memoir, and we would have analysed different emotions and experiences that she was feeling, effectively sitting on the sidelines in Britain and waiting for her whole generation of friends and family to come back to her. So we try to authenticate that voice in certain writing experiences that they had. So again, you can go back into your functional writing. You can go into your diary writing. You can go into your letter writing, which again is important and has its place. We would have explored maybe designing the front page of a newspaper as a result of what we had just read in a particular extract. We may have brought in certain voices from different poetic forms and what was happening in the particular calendar of the First World War. So in terms of when a particular poet wrote a poem in the timeline of the 4 years, it would have reflected what Vera was experiencing at a certain time or point in time during that war experience as well. So lots of different avenues for the students to explore. One of the most interesting, I think, experiences that the students, I think, felt they had was where we got to reproduce a radio report. So again, this would have kind of linked in with the kind of digital portfolio platform that I use with the student CISO. So they had to come up with an authentic, classic kind of BBC news report from the Great War experience. So I would have played them examples from YouTube in terms of, you know, hearing that crackling sound in the background and you get the kind of enunciation correct, almost like the King's Speech kind of stuff again, in many ways. But I have to say it really worked well because I was touching on lots of different areas there. Obviously, there's script writing going on there, but it had to be rooted in the emotions and experiences that the authors and the writers had been experiencing themselves, either those who were directly fighting in the war or those who were like Vera, who were being frustrated, sitting on the sidelines and being, you know, wanting to be part or wanting to be involved a lot more than what she actually was until she made the choice to go over and work as a nurse, obviously. So that was probably a stand-up moment for me. So you're crossing over a number of things there. It feeds into the process of like the CBA one again. So again, this comes back to the foundation work that you do in first year, building the classroom on a culture of classroom talk. And this is kind of, we're moving away now from just like allowing the students to hear themselves speak. We're doing practical stuff now that is rooted in real-time experience of text in the class. But to be able to experiment with the formats and different presentations, because a lot of the students would have been kind of very clued into podcasting and playing around with different apps and stuff like that. And then it allowed them to kind of touch on many different areas in terms of their understanding of what a text is. Because I think they were kind of taken aback when they said, okay, we're going to create a kind of almost like a radio play with this. And you're all going to contribute something to it. So I had a group of 27 students the year I was doing this. So everybody had to contribute something, some part of the report. So, you know, the news reporter was going live to a particular part of France and so on. And again, a lot of it, there was a little bit of hyperbole going on. There has to be done. But the playback from it, when we played it all back together, was about like a 10-minute overview when I put it all together myself with different apps that I used. It was quite the moment, I have to say, when we played it back live in class and the girls, oh, that's me. I can hear myself. That's not me, is it? You put on that voice. I thought I was going to do that. And it just created such a bond amongst the students that here you have an extract from a memoir that probably a lot of the students wouldn't have heard about. And a voice that maybe isn't always recognized as one of the key voices of the war experience. Instead of going straight to your Wilfred Owens and your Siegfried Sassoons and your Rupert Brookes, have a different perspective on it and a different point of view on it, using that as the foundation to develop an understanding and a broader awareness of what a text is. And again, all of that feeds into experiences that they get in the CBA 1 process and in the CBA 2 process in broadening out their understanding of what a text is, that a writing text doesn't have to be a formal letter or a diary entry or a report, etc., etc., etc. It can be something unique and something quite diverse and something that is inclusive as well. You know, I think it adds to the sense of belonging to the class as well. I mean, inclusion is all about having a voice, But belonging is actually having that voice heard. And in a kind of a production like that, you have every student represented and they all feel that they're part of the text itself, that they've learned something from it. So it was a very uplifting experience, that one. It's probably something I probably wouldn't try again because it was just one of those things that worked so well. If I tried to do it again with a different group, I probably would have had a very different experience and I probably wouldn't put myself through it having to compare it. Well, this group did it this way and you're doing it that way. So I think in the moment, and I think a lot of these moments are in the moment, it was probably a standout moment for me. But again, you're rooting it back to the text as the root, you know, bringing it back to what are the key learning outcomes we're focusing in on here. And then having that spread out, like almost like the branches on a tree, really, and bringing it back to kind of their broader understanding of what learning is, that it's not just, you know, rote learning and learning notes and learning quotes, but in terms of their experience of practical learning, it definitely was a major highlight.
Fantastic. A really organic way of approaching the introduction of non-literary texts move through junior cycles. Really interesting to hear your experience there and the students' experience. Quite lovely, I think, to hear such a nice way of offering students a way to be truly a part of the whole thing as a springboard out of a core literary text and exploring different aspects and angles of that narrative, really broadening the voice that is heard, you know, that you're giving it multiple aspects, that you're bringing in the students as well, and allowing them to see that there is not a single story of something like World War One, that there are all of these different layers and many varied experiences of it, and that they can be told in different ways is such an interesting approach.
This conversation will continue with Joe Ralston in our next episode of Conversations from the Classroom, where we will focus on feedback strategies, mixed ability teaching, and reflecting on junior cycle English.
Thank you for listening to this episode. To find out more and to sign up to our mailing list, please visit jct.ie/English. You can also follow us on Twitter for all the latest news and supports at jctenglish.